everybody. I'm Beatty Cohen-Fredos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. You know, it is the most amazing thing. I have had patient crises all morning from one situation to the other. And the thing that's so interesting is that when I hear, and I mention this every single week, when I hear my intro music, I immediately am catapulted to another place. And this music, it really puts a smile on my face. So I think for all of us, whether or not it is music or dancing or a mantra or a call or a cup of coffee or some of Gary Null's nutrients and vitamins, whatever it is that we need to actually do to put smiles on our faces, we need to be committed to doing those particular things. You know, a patient of mine sent me a text yesterday, and I loved it. In fact, I have patients who send me all kinds of things to read, but this really resonated with me. And she says, it's a reminder for all of us to say no to the things, people, and places that steal your joy. So think about that, whether or not there are people in your life, even your family or your friends or your colleagues. Think about the importance of doing what is really in our best interest. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time, I want you to know that I'm a psychotherapist and a sex therapist. I'm the author of the groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this book is about, and this is based on my research with 450 people in the Providence and Connecticut and Massachusetts area. This book teaches all of us how to assess. Yes, assess. It's not sexy. It's not romantic. Who is right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And the reality is that research found that it takes close to a year, not a week, not 2 weeks, not a month, to find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. So for all of you who are in dating situations right now, new dating situations, I think it's a really, really wise thing to go through the process of assessment. Because when you think about it, we assess every single thing in our lives, our cell phones, our computers, our cars. And yet when it comes to relationships, that's probably the last word that most people would use when they are getting to know somebody. And yet it is a very, very important word. In fact, before I did the research and before I wrote the book, I would meet someone because I think used to be, or I seemingly still am, a pretty spontaneous person. So I would meet somebody years ago and I would say, I met this lovely woman or I met this terrific man, but I would never make that kind of a statement today. So, you know, I'll ask friends and I'll ask my patients, what would I actually say? Well, what I would say is that I met somebody who appeared to be loving and respectful and available and trustworthy. And of course, the reality is that I now know that it takes about a year to find out who the person is and whether that person really is who she or he appears to be. You also probably have heard me speaking on national radio and television, and I have a private practice here in really beautiful, beautiful New York City. It's in the 60s today. The sun is shining, and I also see patients in East Hampton. So what is the Ask Beatty Show really all about? Well, it is about empowerment. thinking about and doing, not just thinking, but doing all of the things that we can do to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. So we talk about mental health issues, we talk about sexuality, we talk about relationships, and how and what to do to maximize our physical and our emotional well-being, despite the reality of all the stressors of life. And of course, my mantra is for everybody, including myself, acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can the things that continue to get in the way of our life and our relationships, understanding, of course, that we cannot change history. And for those people who may be stuck in the past, again, we can't change what did and did not happen in our life, but I have found, and I've been practicing now for over 35 years. I can hardly believe that it is over 35 years, but it's been and it continues to be an amazing career. I've met people and confronted situations that I never, ever would have dealt with in my own personal life. But what I have found with these so-called skeletons in the closet and unfinished business that continues to play havoc with our life is that there is a way to go through the trauma, get ourselves right into what happened and did not happen in our lives so that we are able to then emotionally process. We can really emotionally process the trauma and the disappointments so that we are then once and for all able to fully live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And this is why it's really a shame that so many people allow, I mean, it's not that they consciously want to punish themselves, but that they allow their unfinished business, whether or not it's traumas of various different kinds, sexual abuse, sexual assault, coming from very, very dysfunctional families when they were children. And of course, children, I mean, we're born into families. We do not have the control or the power to change what happened to us as children. But what we do have is we do have the power to be able to work through as best as we possibly can the things that have really hurt us and disappointed us and have played havoc with our lives. And this is a journey, and I hope I've convinced you this over the years, that we do not need to do on our own. And that the very best thing, if we're down and we're depressed and we're anxious and we have unfinished business or we're feeling lonely, that the very best thing that we can do is to reach out to family and friends, if we're lucky enough to have really great family and friends, and if need be, to a professional. It can make our life's journey easier and less isolated and alienated and lonely. Because if we're talking about loneliness, I cite the depression statistics every single week. 17 million adults in the United States suffer from clinical depression. 40 million Americans are suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. The domestic violence statistics, they continue to soar. 3 to 4 women are killed every single day by their intimate partner. And, you know, this is so frustrating. It's so frustrating for me as a psychotherapist, because I think about all the self-help books and coaches and relationship experts and retreats and programs. And yet we are clearly missing the boat. And what I have discovered over all of these years is that if we're looking at relationships and if we're looking at divorce, for example, 48% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages end in divorce. And that number for third marriages is 74% of couples marrying for the third time. They too end up in front of a judge in a divorce court. So what is it? What is it that is really going on? What is it that we are missing, that we are seeing domestic violence statistics go up, that we are seeing divorce statistics, you know, as high as they possibly are? Well, what I have found is that there are three things that we all need to really embrace and we need to do if we are ever going to find and if ever we're going to have a successful relationship with anyone. And for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie shows, you hear me repeat this on a regular basis. And I keep repeating this on a regular basis because we are not seeing a decline in any of these problems or any of these issues in the country and even around the world. So there are three things. And the first thing is that each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, and we need to be willing to acknowledge and address and again resolve as best as we can, understanding that we cannot change our history, the things that continue to get in the way of our life, whether or not it's trauma of various different kinds, sexual abuse, sexual assault, dysfunctional early family relationships. We have a responsibility. It's not to our partners necessarily, but we have a responsibility to ourselves to take care of business, because if we do not take care of our own business, we're not going to be able to live happy and joyful lives, nor are we going to be able to find and maintain and sustain healthy relationships with anyone. So as I used to tell my daughter, the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake, and we need to be the cake. We need to be solid as we can possibly be, so that when we are entering in to relationships, we are entering into relationships where we are really okay, not out of depression, not out of neediness, not because we don't feel that we can make it on our own, but that we feel terrific about ourselves. And in that way, we are going to be able to hopefully attract terrific people, friends, and including lovers and serious relationships as well. So number one, we need to be okay. Number two, we really need to become students and figure out the ingredients that go into long-lasting, healthy relationships. And people will talk about communication or they will talk about intimacy, but there is much to be learned about what these ingredients really are. Communication is not just talking, and problem solving is not just solving problems. There are skills that are involved in all of these different ingredients. And if we are going to be on top of our game, we need to know the ingredients and we need to become skilled. We need to become skilled in our interpersonal relationships. And of course, number three is my book and my 10-step formula, which, as I said previously, teaches us really how to go through a very, very in-depth assessment process, which takes about a year. And there is not a shortcut. Of course, if we are seeing a lot of red flags with our beloved or the person who we are hoping is going to become a serious partner, then obviously we're not going to stay in a relationship for a year if we're seeing a lot of red flags of various different kinds. Again, the book is For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, and you can buy it on Zoom. And all I can say from my own personal experiences is that I wish that I had had this book, this very, very book, when I was starting out in my own dating life many, many, many years ago. So again, when we're talking about empowerment, and Gary Nell talks about empowerment, all of the things that we can do and the nutrients that we should be having every single day, there are a lot of other things that we should be doing as well, including, of course, eating healthily and interacting with healthy people and socializing. And these include exercise and weight training and yoga and meditation and massage and acupuncture. Acupuncture, and even taking a really relaxing bath. What this can do to us in all kinds of ways can only be viewed in a really, really positive light. And if you don't want to do weight training or you don't want to do yoga or meditation, we can always take walks, brisk walks around the block. And it also does great things for our mood and our serotonin levels as well. And of course, having supportive people in our life, so, so, so critical. You know, every year at around the end of the year, New Year's Eve, I would ask people to take a look and see who the people are in your life, whether they're supportive, whether or not they are loving, whether they are destructive, whether they are self-sabotaging in some way to themselves or to you. And I think it's really important that we do this on a regular basis and make sure that our group, and it may be a very, very small group of people, are people who are loving and supportive. And sometimes it's difficult, but we need to be willing to eliminate toxins, including toxic people. And that sometimes means friends and family. And I'm not suggesting at all that if relationships become tough, that we're going to just eliminate and walk away from our relationships. I think it is so important that in good relationships that we are all really committed to acknowledging and addressing and resolving as best as we can the relationship problems that are getting in the way of our life and also of our relationships. And there are a lot of other things that we can do as well, including positive visualization and dancing, of course, and listening to music and getting out into nature. Some people really enjoy aromatherapy and essential oils and helping others and giving back. I cannot even begin to tell you how much I have gotten over all of these years in helping others and giving back. It's joyful to know that you are able to make a difference in somebody else's life. A lot of people find that journaling is really a great way. It's a great, great way to be able to express emotions. And of course, getting a dog, what a great way to meet people and to exercise and to socialize. And what could be better, especially if you're living alone, and to have your companion, your dog, greet you with hugs and kisses every single time that you come through the door. And what about support groups like 12-step programs? And of course, so many of the groups now are online, lectures, exercise videos. And there are more and more ways now with technology, although there are some cons with technology as well, that we are really able to connect. You know, I give people in my practice, my patients, the same homework every single time at the end of every single session. And the homework that I give them is the homework that I want to give you. And that is to think about, as you navigate your days, whether or not you are living your life and you are behaving in ways that are really in your best interest. So the question, of course, that I'm asking you to ask yourself on a regular basis, one question, is this good for me? Is this relationship good for me? Is this interaction good for me? Am I eating in a way that is good for me? Am I getting enough sleep so that I am not going to be walking around fatigued and tired. It is a mindset that we all need to really embrace, because so many people that I treat and so many people that I know consciously or unconsciously are engaging in destructive, in self-destructive, and in self-sabotaging behavior. And I think that becoming mindful of how it is that we are behaving and whether or not we are really being good to ourselves, it can put us at a place where we are then able to really pivot and begin to make some changes. Yesterday was Sunday, and I received this text from a current patient of mine, and I really want to share this with you. The title is The Stanford Saint Study, a TMS Breakthrough for Depression. It has been definitively proven, and I'm just reading from this synopsis, it has been definitively proven that transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, is an effective treatment for treatment-resistant depression. However, there are aspects to TMS that make it harder to access, such as daily treatment for weeks and cost, especially when outcomes from the treatment vary. So here we have the researchers in the Stanford SAINT, S-A-I-N-T study. What they have found is that this TMS therapy really, really is effective for depression that has not responded to psychotherapy and to medication. So if we're looking at what are the current treatments for depression, and I wanted to tell you that I spoke to the doctor who wrote this article this morning, a Dr. Len Lance, and he is a psychiatrist in Montana. And I'm really hoping that we are going to book a date very, very soon, because I really want to have him on the show to talk about his experience with TMS as a practicing psychotherapist. So if we're looking at the current treatments for depression, okay, so psychotherapy is and will always be the foundation of treatment for depression. And of course, as many people know, antidepressants are often the next step in treatment, though some people with depression instead choose to try antidepressant medications first and then start psychotherapy later if they are not seeing a good response to medication. And I have always found, since living in the United States, that the antidepressant, anti-anxiety medications are far, far too widely prescribed. And I think that there are many, many things that we can do, including exercise and eating well and taking supplements that can really help to alleviate symptoms of depression, including psychotherapy, of course. So the thing that is interesting about this is that a significant percentage of people get temporarily and partially better only to fall back into depression, feeling more demoralized than when they started. And what Dr. Lance has found is that this new treatment, and we're not talking about ECT, electroshock therapy, this new treatment for depression, according to him, is an absolute game changer. And it's called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS therapy. Now, apparently, and I just read the article for the very first time yesterday, so I am not an expert in this at all, but it's just some information that I think is important to impart to you. It does not require psychiatric medication to work, which is interesting. It works when traditional treatments such as medication and therapy are failing. And TMS therapy, it is FDA approved, and scientific research proves that it works. So how does it work? Well, it uses high intensity magnetic pulses to stimulate different parts of the brain. And, you know, I was very, very curious which hospitals and centers were using the TMS treatment. And hospitals such as Columbia, Mount Sinai, Harvard, Johns Hopkins, the Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, NYU. So if any of you are interested, again, it is the Stanford Saint, S. capital S, capital A, capital I, capital N, T study. And it is a TMS, capital T, capital M, capital S breakthrough for depression. And I am really hoping within the next few weeks that Dr. Lance is going to be able to come on the show. And I'm very, very curious to hear about his experiences with TMS. Another couple of articles that I want to share with you, and these are reminders. These are empowerment reminders that will help you live happier and healthier and more joyful lives. The first article, Seven Habits, you'll notice the happiest people practicing, but most of us rarely do. So what are these seven habits? Okay, number one, they choose to have healthy relationships. The importance of healthy relationships and how toxic relationships can literally kill us. So a Dr. Robert Waldinger, who's a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and the current director of the study, told the Harvard Gazette, "The surprising finding is that our relationships and how happy we are in our relationships has a powerful influence on our health." And you know, this cannot be underscored enough. Taking care of your body is important, but tending to your relationships is a form of self-care too. And for participants, half of whom are still alive, as of this writing, the only thing that really mattered, it wasn't the money and the bigger and the better and the boats and the houses and the trips, but the thing that really mattered was their relationships to other people. So that's number one. Number two, have a mindset of giving. Only by giving, you are able to receive more than you already have. And, you know, when you think about that, you know, how good we feel when we are able to give to others. Number three, make all your decisions in integrity. Living, working, and leading in integrity means that we don't question ourselves. When we listen to our hearts and we do the right things, life becomes simple and we live in peace. Our actions are now open for everyone to see, and we don't have to worry about hiding anything. Make all of our decisions in integrity. You know, somebody once said that in looking for people to hire, this was a quote from billionaire Warren Buffett, chairman and CEO of Berkshire Hathaway. Okay. He said that somebody once said that in looking for people to hire, you look for three qualities: integrity, intelligence, and energy. And if you don't have the first, that's integrity, the other two will kill you. You think about it, it's true. If you hire somebody without integrity, you really want them to be dumb and lazy, right? So how important it is, not just, you know, in our decisions with who we're going to hire at work, but also who we want in our lives. Number four, practice mindfulness. Positive and happy people make the daily choice of surrendering their thoughts and feelings to the moment. and being mindful and focusing your awareness in the here and now. And sometimes it is challenging to do. By calmly acknowledging and accepting your feelings and thoughts, you attain great peace and free yourself from worry. Because the great thing about mindfulness is that it blocks distractions that try to derail you from your dreams and your goals. Number five, have good emotional boundaries. And I cannot say this enough. Negativity is rampant. We can't scroll Facebook updates before being hammered by someone's political rant or hatred. Happy people remain in the positive because they control what they let in. We can choose who we let in and what we let in, whether on social media or in people face-to-face interactions. So we need to all take the stand of a happy person. We have to protect ourselves by limiting exposure to negative things and negative people. We need to seek out friendships with people who will lift us up, not bring us down, and read stories about the good things happening around the world. Of course, that doesn't mean shut off to, you know, some of the tragedy that is going on around the world, but the importance of being able to say to ourselves, you know, enough is enough. I can't hear anything more about the political upset in this country. So again, it's about having really good emotional boundaries and being mindful of when you or someone else is crossing over that certain line. I used to tell patients all the time, you want to have these red lights kind of going off in your head as a reminder to say enough is enough. Number six, exercise patience. Patience is virtue, and I wish more people practiced it. It helps us to relax and rethink our decisions. In fact, there was a 2012 study, and researchers found that patient people made more progress toward their goals and were more satisfied when they achieved them, particularly if those goals were difficult compared with less patient people. Other research found that patient people tend to experience less depression and negative emotions and can cope better with stressful situations. Additionally, they feel more gratitude, more connection to others, and experience a greater sense of abundance. And finally, upgrade your happiness to joy. Well, let's hear what they have to say about this. So while we're highlighting the habits of happy people here, you may be surprised to find that there is a big difference between happiness and joy. Joy is more serene, stable, and deeper, whereas happiness can be fleeting, emotional, and temporary, kind of like watching a movie that you've been dying to see. And being in a state of joy comes down to choice. And making that choice has long-term psychological benefits. In fact, brain research by Waturo Sato of Kyoto University says that when you choose joyful behaviors like gratitude, compassion, forgiveness, and kindness, you hold the key to rewiring a region of the brain called the procunus. And by rewiring your brain with new habits that lead to joy, you will be able to control your sense of well-being. So talk about needing to be really mindful of doing things that are really in our best interest. So that if you happen to be caught in a vicious circle of nasty emotions like doubt and fear and uncertainty, your best course of action is to replace those emotions by consciously and intentionally choosing joyful behaviors. Let's say you're having a really, really, really bad day. We need to all ask ourselves, okay, we've had a horrible day. We've had terrible interactions with people, with colleagues, with family members. What can I do right now that is going to be positive, that is going to be in my best interest, that will help me get out of this cycle of negativity and depression? So use the tools. This is what they suggest. Use the tools of meditation, prayer, journaling, mindfulness, and I'm going to add exercise as well to aid you in the process. Check in with close friends and family after a few weeks and ask if they have noticed a difference in you, and you will be surprised by what they will tell you. Another really interesting article, a short article that I wanted to talk with you about, are the three things that we can do today if you're exhausted, because people today are constantly talking about how tired they are. And we have science-backed strategies for getting your energy back. No caffeine required. Okay. And, you know, I was thinking about this article and I was writing down some of the things that may be zapping us. And what do you think about this? You know, work, is our work getting in the way of our being able to really enjoy life? And that may be that you may want to consider a different kind of work, go back to school, because we spend so many hours working. And if we really don't like what we're doing, and if we're finding that it's completely exhausting and unsatisfying, you get to a point where you really need to ask yourself, okay, what are you going to do about this? Are our friends zapping us from feeling good? Or what about our partner or our children or our social network? So again, there's a lot of reflection. There's a lot of mindfulness that we need to actually practice so that we can stay on course. So what are the three things that we need to do today if we are feeling exhausted? Well, according to this article, stop multitasking. When we are exhausted, it can be tempting to try and juggle as many tasks as possible. So we can, in theory, not in practice, finish earlier and then rest. But in practice, multitasking doesn't help. When we try to take on too many things at once, it makes it even harder for us to focus and actually decreases productivity, according to the American Psychological Association. And furthermore, researchers at Stanford University, they reviewed more than a decade's worth of data on multitasking and found, this is really interesting, that people who engage with multiple types of media at the same time perform, listen to this, worse on memory-related tasks. So if you're already exhausted, do your brain a favor and only focus on one task at a time. Number two, spend some time in nature, or at least looking at it, because if you're already working with depleted energy levels, you probably try and avoid any additional movement or stimuli. But spending some time in nature, and I think we all know this as well, just taking a walk, looking at the trees, can leave you feeling energized. And you don't need to take a week or even a full day to reap the benefits of the great outdoors. According to researchers, spending even 20 minutes walking outdoors can help reduce stress and make us feel better. And what is the third thing that we should do if we're really feeling tired and exhausted? Take a nap. Right? Society has conditioned us to think of sleep, especially naps, as everything from luxurious to lazy, when in fact they are neither. According to a 2006 study published in the journal Sleep, And this is interesting. I've never been able to do this. I think my husband, Jim, is able to do this. Even a 10-minute nap produced immediate improvements, including increased cognitive performance and decreased sleepfulness. So everybody, we know about the three things to do if we are feeling exhausted. And we've also learned, and we need to take this in, the seven habits you will notice the happiest people practicing but rarely do. Well, we're going to take a bit of a segue talking about what we need to do to relax and what we need to do to not be so tired. And I want to discuss the Alec Baldwin situation. And of course, many of you know that Alec Baldwin accidentally killed a young and beloved cinematographer named Hilna Hutchins. And this was on the film set of Rust on October the 21st. And the actor discharged a prop gun. It was supposed to have been blank, in a shocking incident that resulted in Hutchins' death and the injury of the movie's director, Joel Souza. Baldwin was told that the gun was cold, indicating that it didn't contain ammunition, but a live bullet was later discovered. And of course, people have had all kinds of reactions. You either love Alec Baldwin or you hate Alec Baldwin, and there were was a lot of commentary from the crew that this was not the greatest set to be working on. But I felt that it was really important. I felt it was really important to discuss this more in depth with my husband, sociologist Jim Freddos, who happens to also be the host of an amazing television show. And I'm not just biased. I mean, there are people, thousands of people around the world who are watching his show, The Radical Imagination. So we have a few things to talk about, Jim.
We do. And thank you. I always love to be back here on your show. And I haven't had my nap yet today, but I feel energized and happy and joyous to be with you and to be with your audience today.
Well, good. You know, I think that one of the things with this situation is that probably few people have been talking about or thinking about the trauma that Alec Baldwin is going through as a result of his accidentally killing this young woman. You know, easy to blame, easy to point fingers, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's important.
Article that you're delivering to your audience here is so very important. And I haven't heard or seen too many of these sorts of comments. So I think it's really fabulous that we take off on this and talk about it. Little bit.
I mean, the fact is, of course, and I think it is important to look at all situations in a systemic way. You know, we're very, very prone to blame and to not look at the gestalt of a situation. So, I mean, here you have a situation. I mean, clearly, most humans aren't wired to intentionally harm or kill others. So when it happens accidentally, our instinct, is to feel guilt, shame, and self-condemnation. And I think that there is a real lack of resources for unintentional killers.
Right, this is what this is at this point. It has not been raised any sort of criminal charges. So as far as you know, this was unintentional accident, a tragic accident. What must he be feeling at this point? And it's not just about him and Alec Baldwin. Who the heck knows what he's really like? All we could see is what we see of him through the screen. But he is a human being, and he certainly obviously has feelings. And all of us have made mistakes. And some of us, not too many, thankfully, have ended up unintentionally hurting and injuring and even killing people. And I think the statistics are amazing. What did you point out in that article? 30,000 people are killed accidentally a year. So there's a lot of that's a lot of people who are walking around with incredibly powerful feelings of profound emotion.
And of course, he never would have dreamed that that the gun was loaded. So I mean, you can imagine the feelings of shock and the experiencing of a moral injury, the guilt when our behavior fails to live up to our moral expectations. And many unintentional killers often engage, and hopefully, if he needs to, he'll be able to get some help in self-destructive behaviors like denying themselves happiness or punishing themselves or hurting themselves. Because the fact is that, I've never really thought about it, but there is a lack of resources for unintentional killers. Yeah. Things happen.
Especially in the article, isn't it? It's true. And again, this goes way beyond Baldwin.
Right.
And so I think for your audience, you should make that, we made that point that this is for so many other people who are suffering in this way too.
Because unintentional killers, when you think about it, they may actually avoid seeking help out of fear that their feelings are invalid, selfish, or a superficial attempt to gain sympathy. And the reality is that all trauma is important, not just the person who experienced the trauma that was done to them, but it is, trauma is trauma for all people who are involved.
Right, and there could be a history of trauma in the person who has been further traumatized or who is doing the trauma as well. I don't know really that much about Baldwin's background, but he, from what we can tell, he's had been involved in various self-destructive behaviors in the past. We read of him and his temper and so on. But again, we need to go beyond that and to go to the actual incident that he is now involved. That's irrelevant. That past.
And I think
he is being traumatized. And what can he do now? What can all of us do to understand this phenomenon better?
And I do wonder, one would hope that his family would be very empathic and supportive, but I haven't heard in the media, where anybody is empathizing or consoling.
Well, unfortunately, probably in the industry, it's a black mark on them and this and that. They're more concerned with maybe the bottom line. And that tells you another thing about the inhumanity of particular industries where they're more concerned about that. But look, I'm sure he has people in his inner circle there. His daughter has come out in support of him. I'm sure that he has a supportive family. I'm sure he has also had a number of people in his field that have come to try to support him. But still, he's alone, in a sense, with this.
Exactly.
With this experience.
And you're right. 30,000 people in the United States unintentionally kill somebody each year.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And probably.
Involuntary.
Probably. Well, we don't know what the charge there is going to be a charge, but probably the majority of these unintentional killers are struggling and anguished. You can be sure of that, but there are no therapeutic protocols because many therapists are extremely competent in dealing and treating trauma.
Inexperienced.
Right. But most of them have not encountered somebody who has been through this and may not have the guidance for this kind of tragedy.
And again, for your audience, this article is written by a social psychologist or therapist?
This is written by, Gina Rue. This was USA Today.
Who in fact, inadvertently killed an 8-year-old boy
Well, this was the article. Years ago, right? Well, this no, Gina Rue, she wrote the article, but social psychologist Marianne Gray empathizes with Baldwin because in 1977, this Marianne Gray unintentionally hit an 8-year-old boy who dashed in front of a car and on a highway, an experience that left her full of grief, guilt, shame, and anger.
40 years ago.
Yes. Right. Yes. But it may be tempting, and I think initially, you know, people were criticizing Baldwin, but experts say that this is an oversimplification of a complex incident.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, there's many facets to this. Look, look, something happened there, okay?
Right.
And that's a separate issue, whether you had union people, non-human people, union people, whether they were trying to do things on the cheap and so on. He is the executive producer, so there is some responsibility there on that level, but we're talking about something else here again. He's a human being. He may have had his own temper issues, whatever. But again, I remember hearing from Fox News would say, well, you know, sort of this vengeance. Well, he got what he deserved. You know,
that's terrible.
Portrayed Trump like this. So now, you know, our God wills it and all of that. But no, you're absolutely right. And it's so important. Again, what sort of help can he get? And you're right. Therapists are not that experienced with this. So what does the article, what do you tell
but
us?
He is, he has experienced trauma, and anybody who is dealing with trauma, if that is one's area of specialization, as it is mine, you deal with the person's trauma without the judgment. And that's what's important. Here is a man who has sustained an incredible trauma himself. And the thing is that we have enough compassion in our hearts that we can not only mourn this young woman, but also recognize the suffering and the despair that Baldwin may very well be experiencing as well.
One of the things he's doing, right, as the article pointed out, he's almost constant in touch with her family, right? Is that something that is recommended therapeutically for
I think that people have to figure out what they need to do, and the family needs to decide on their own whether or not they want that kind of communication and contact. It's not for us to say what's right or wrong.
It is okay so far, at least from this case.
From what we know. But this is something that different parties have to negotiate. Do we want contact? Do we not want contact?
Well, let me ask you this too, as a therapist too. Would it be better or not better to, given a reasonable amount of time, to go back into his work again, to get involved, and again?
That's going to be his decision.
Right. Well, do you think the individual therapist, if he is working with one, will have to help him make that decision? But is it generally better for a traumatized person to get back into this? I want to put it
the swing of things
as best they can, as soon as they can, after a trauma.
If that's what they want to do.
Well, they can, I guess, hang around and not get into and just, well, I don't know, feel horrible for 20 years too. But I guess that's their choice. But there must be some ways of helping. Yes, they have their choices on this, but there must be some ways that we can enter into a more manageable life again.
Well, we have to.
Account this horrible
event. Right. But I mean, as therapists dealing with trauma, I mean, we have to help people, you know, first of all, emotionally process what did and did not happen, and to help them deal with exactly where they are at, and then help them to figure out, more importantly, where they want to go.
Well, so what you're saying,
and there's no right or wrong, Jim.
Well, what you're saying is also too, if you in fact go over the facts with Baldwin, let's say you're Alex's Alex's therapist, you go over the facts again with him, and he may have not been right in terms of having a fully competent staff there, but his responsibility should be seen proportionally in that way, right? That he wasn't, it wasn't ultimately him that did this. I'm not explaining it quite as well as I want to.
Well, it was ultimately him that did shoot this young woman.
Yeah, but it was an accident.
Of course it was an accident. And this is the thing that we need to be able to feel
some compassion.
For both, without pointing fingers. And obviously, in reading about this incident, there were a lot of problems apparently on the set.
And could this accident somehow been prevented in some way? We never know. We'll never know.
Well, obviously, I mean, somebody did not check the gun.
So what is he going to make of that? Is another thing
But Alec Baldwin, in a tweet actually today, and we've just got a couple of minutes right left. Yes.
Yeah.
What he's recommended is that on all the sets where there are going to be guns, that there should be police on the set.
Point you're
yes.
Making.
Right.
That is a concrete. So out Absolutely. Of this trauma and that something concrete can happen, and he may become a spokesman for that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. How to turn this terrible tragedy into something that hopefully would prevent
Absolutely.
Another tragedy like this, from occurring. You know, I talk a lot, Jim, about lessons to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we learn lessons? We usually learn lessons from experiencing a lot of pain.
Yep.
And a lot of upset. And I think that's sort of the good news as people go through therapy or they process trauma of various different kinds is what have we learned?
To err as human, we are all broken vessels.
Yes.
We all make mistakes.
Exactly.
What do we do with it?
Exactly.
And how do we
move forward and do things differently? And not repeat a history that was either destructive or self-destructive or self-sabotaging, and that the bottom line that really doesn't work.
Knowing that life is probably always going to afford certain accidents and mistakes.
Absolutely.
We must humble ourselves.
Right. For all of us.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, listen, I want to thank you as always for your wisdom and commentary. Wow. And I'm looking at the clock. I don't even know where the time has come and gone today. I had a number of other things that I wanted to discuss with you, which we will, of course, do next week. And I hope that all of you are reading my new advice column in Dan's newspapers. I'm writing on a variety of different subjects. People are actually sending me questions, and I will be discussing the articles on the Ask BD show on a regular basis. So again, I want to thank you so much for tuning in and listening and texting and emailing with your comments and your questions. And I'm going to leave you with my two weekly messages. The first is, and this is really important, to do everything that you possibly can that is in your best interest so that you will love yourself and be good to yourself. And secondly, as we would all agree around the world, is that we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. I want to thank the producers, my friends at the Progressive Radio Network. And again, thank you all very much for listening and tuning in every week. And I will talk with you next Monday live and every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can also listen to all the Ask BD shows that I've been doing since 2013 on the Progressive Radio Network archives. So have a good rest of the day, and we'll talk soon. And remember, be good to yourself, and be good to others. Bye-bye, everybody.